still fuzzy. There was nothing Black could do when the man grabbed him by the hair and dragged him into the same dark alcove he'd dragged the African. Black fell to his knees and looked down at Malse. His previously good leg was bent sideways at a 90-degree angle, and his head was twisted all the way around backward. Somewhere, there was a witch doctor who owed him a refund. Couldn't sleep? The quiet voice sent a surge of adrenaline through Black, bringing him back to full alertness.
Mitch? What are you doing here?
A gun appeared, and a moment later there was a silencer pressed to Black's forehead. I was about to ask you the same thing. A thousand lies passed through his mind, but he knew that every one of them would end with his brain splattered over what was left of Malse.
There's information on you and the others inside the church, Mitch. I don't think anyone would be able to find it, but I didn't want to take chances.
I asked you about this a few days ago. You told me the place was clean.
That wasn't entirely accurate.
What kind of information? Black didn't answer. You have one chance to convince me you're just an idiot, Kent. Because if I start thinking that you're playing both...
It's an entire dossier on everyone involved and what we're doing, Black blurted. I'm sorry, Mitch. I told an old friend that if I were to disappear, he should come get it and release it on the internet.
Why would you think that you were going to disappear?
I don't know, man. Because why would someone like you give a shit about someone like me? Particularly when you've got Donatella and the fucking Russian Terminator to watch your back. I'm pretty sure that next to the word expendable in the dictionary, there's a picture of me.
No one on any of my teams has ever been expendable, Kent.
I understand that now. That's why I'm here. I was going to get the stuff and destroy it. I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to think, you know,
that you're an idiot.
Yeah, that.
As much as Rapp wanted to put a bullet in this little dipshit, there was no point. When he'd started out, he'd made similarly boneheaded moves that Stan Hurley would have been justified in burying him for. What exactly are we talking about? A single 11x14 envelope. No electronic files. Nothing on a server somewhere.
No way, man. I swear. That shit's too hard to control.
He lowered his weapon. Okay.
What do you mean, okay? That's it?
Rapp didn't answer. The ringer on his phone was turned off, but he'd felt it vibrate three separate times over the last few minutes. When he pulled it out, he found multiple messages from Claudia. Not a great sign. She wasn't a woman prone to calling repeatedly to deliver good news. He dialed, and not surprisingly, she picked up immediately.
Mitch, where are you? I've been trying to get in touch.
I'm at the church. What's up?
I found Joel Wilson.
Where?
I'm sorry, Mitch. My man at the airport let me down. Wilson's on the ground and bearing down on your position with four cars.
ETA?
Call it 5 minutes.
Can you slow him down?
I have people along every route to you. We can probably improvise something.
Do what you can. Kent and I are going into the church.
Going in? Why would you-
Don't talk, Claudia. Listen. Put Grisha on the north roof with a rifle. Put Donatella east.
Okay,
she said reluctantly.
I'll do it.
And don't worry. I'll see you in a few hours. Black, still on his knees, started to protest before Rapp could even disconnect the call.
Donatella on the east roof? That should be me, Mitch. She's crap with a rifle. She says it herself.
Rapp shook his head. You're coming with me.
What? To help you find the envelope? I can tell you right where it-
No. So I can use you to stop bullets when this thing goes to shit. Chapter 46. How much farther? Wilson asked.
We good, his driver responded enigmatically.
It was likely that he hadn't understood the question, and that those two mangled words were the only English he knew. Nassar had handed over his entire team and arranged for Wilson to be met by a further contingent of men at the airport. The dilapidated SUV he was riding in was at the center of a 3-car motorcade, picking its way through the city of Juba. While the local team's English skills were lacking, all the men were well-armed, and all seemed familiar with the operating theater. Still, it was less than ideal. The lack of U.S. personnel, an FBI team at least, but even better some SEALs, added to the sense that he had stepped off the edge of the world. Despite the demands of his former job, he'd never much liked traveling. Even vacations to places like London and Paris had made him feel vaguely uncomfortable. The loss of control that went along with being in a foreign land never sat well with him. Intermittent intel was still filtering in, but he probably wasn't going to get anything else useful. The problem wasn't that sources weren't available. It was that he couldn't bring himself to trust most of them. Irene Kennedy had her hands in everything, and half the world's intelligence community was either loyal to her or afraid of her. That left him with no choice but to rely on a patchwork of people who either hated her or were too long retired to be influenced by her. It appeared to have been enough, though. They'd managed to sift through all of Claudia Dufour's emails and tease out every piece of relevant information they contained. A friend at Immigration had provided the critical piece in all this, the names of former residents of Juba now residing in the U.S. They had independently confirmed the location of the church Rapp had referred to and given a fairly detailed description of its surroundings. Combined with satellite maps and a series of photos they'd found on a travel blog, Wilson had a reasonable sense of his tactical situation. The lead car turned down a side street and Wilson twisted around, looking through the dust at the vehicle behind. Normally he relished being in command, but this was something different. His lack of knowledge about this part of the world and his difficulty in communicating with the men working under him made him feel less like the captain of this ship than someone caught in its wake. As much as he hated to admit it, he wished that Ali Nassar hadn't been called back to Saudi Arabia. Unlike Irene Kennedy, Nassar had a straightforward manner that instilled confidence in everyone around him. He had combat experience and a reputation for backing up his comrades in arms. Wilson faced forward again as his driver turned to follow their lead car. What would it be like to capture the infamous Mitch Rapp? To drag him back to the U.S. in chains? To expose him and Kennedy for what they were. There would be the massive media circus, of course, and the political posturing that always came with it. Then there would be the endless hearings and the inevitable vicious attacks by the people who benefited from the status quo. Even as the hero of this story, Wilson knew it would be a difficult couple of years. At the end, though, he would be able to write his own ticket. Returning to his position as an FBI executive had its benefits, but seemed like small thinking. While he'd never fancied himself a politician, it was impossible not to consider that as an option. With the Saudis' financial backing and his newfound notoriety, it was hard to imagine that a Senate seat wouldn't be his for the taking. Was it feasible that he could take Carl Ferris's place as chair of the Judiciary Committee? He'd love to see the look on that backstabbing old prune's face if he did. Wilson was blinded by a sudden flash ahead of his lead car. A moment later, the sound of the explosion reached them, mixing with the static of machine gun fire. "Go right," Wilson screamed, all thoughts of his future suddenly extinguished. "Right, you idiot!" He crammed himself onto the floorboard as his driver spun the wheel and jammed the accelerator to the floor. The sound of gunfire faded, and Wilson rose just long enough to confirm that his motorcade was still intact. Arabic chatter was audible over the walkie-talkie lying on the seat next to him, and he picked it up. "What the hell was that? Report!" "It is fine," a voice responded. He recognized it as belonging to one of the men who had been with him in Cape Town, the only one of a handful of English speakers he had. "What the hell are you talking about? You call that fine?" just a skirmish between two of the factions trying to control the city. We can route around. It won't be a problem.
Are you sure? Do you know where we're going? We could end up heading down a dead end and getting pinned down.
Be calm, Special Agent Wilson. It's nothing. Much like your Chicago, no?
Chapter 47. Rapp kept Kent Black in front of him, taking in the grounds of the church as they moved through the gate and toward the rear entrance. Abdo hadn't stationed a man inside the wall, probably out of fear of spooking them if they returned. The precaution was negated by a dim flicker visible around one of the boarded windows. Black didn't seem to notice, instead focusing on getting through the courtyard without making any noise. They arrived at the door leading into the office and took positions on either side. Rapp had his Glock drawn, but Black hadn't brought a sidearm. Even a silenced one would have been too loud to use against Abdo's men, and he was smart enough to admit that he couldn't hit much with one anyway. Rapp gave a short nod, and Black slid his key into the lock. It clicked, and the door swung open on quiet hinges. The younger man seemed surprised when Rapp thumbed him inside. Apparently, he'd thought the part about him being there as a human shield was a joke. Unarmed, he swung around the door jamb and disappeared into the gloom. Rapp followed, scanning over the sights of his weapon. There was just enough illumination for him to confirm that the room was empty. He moved to the door leading to the nave and immediately spotted two men huddled around a small fire near the middle. One was sitting in a pew sideways to Rapp's position, and the other was directly facing him. The night had turned cool, and both were leaning forward, warming their hands. They seemed to have settled in for the evening, so Rapp signaled for Black to retrieve the envelope. Instead, the former ranger crept over to him.
"It's not in the office, Mitch. It's out there."
Rapp swore under his breath.
"I'm sorry. I really am."
There wasn't much Rapp could do about the man facing him. Fortunately, he was staring directly into the fire, and it was reasonable to assume that he wouldn't be able to see beyond the ring of warmth and light.
There were no guarantees, though.
With little choice, Rapp moved through the door, keeping movements painfully slow. When there was no reaction, he allowed himself to pick up the pace a bit, finally escaping the man's line of sight and angling in on them. He stopped just beyond the circle of firelight and holstered his Glock. While the noise from the silenced weapon wouldn't be a problem inside the structure, the flash would penetrate the cracked boards covering the windows. Neither of the men was carrying a sidearm, and their rifles were just outside of easy reach. Killing them was doable, but killing them silently was going to be a trick. If he'd been with Azeroth, they could each take one. Involving Black, though, would likely cause more problems than it solved. Rapp's eye moved to a machete leaning against the end of the pew closest to him. He'd initially registered it as a potential threat, but now it was starting to look like an opportunity. A little more slasher flick than he'd normally go for, but this was no time to get picky. He pulled a thin cord from his pocket and strode casually into the light. The man in the pew spotted him first, spinning as Rapp picked up the machete. The African threw his arms up, but was too slow. The machete connected with the top of his head, penetrating a good 2 inches before getting lodged in his skull. As expected, the other man went for his AK. The most practical way to get his hands on it was to simply turn onto his stomach and reach out. He did exactly that, presenting his unprotected back. Rapp slipped the cord around his throat and dropped onto him. The African was young and powerful, managing to fight his way to his knees as he clawed at the cord. Rapp secured his legs around his waist and twisted back, flipping him into the fire. The flames had the intended effect, splitting the man's focus between his lack of air and the coals igniting his fatigues. The battle intensified, and then was suddenly over. Rapp dragged the body off the campfire and rolled it across the floor, making sure the flames were out.
"Damn," Black said, approaching hesitantly from behind. "Have you ever thought about working in a hockey mask?"
Get the fucking file, Kent.
Rapp went to one of the windows and looked through a gap as Black started pulling up floorboards. There was no sign that any of the men watching the church had noticed anything, but it was hard to be sure. If they were aware of what had happened, would they attack immediately or call for backup? Behind him, Black had gained access to a floor safe and was using a red penlight to work the combination. A moment later, he came up with the envelope he'd described. Rapp pulled the flap and looked inside, scanning a few surreptitiously taken photos and a one-page explanation of what and who was involved. "You know I should kill you for this," Rapp said.
"Yeah,"
Black responded, looking at the floor. Rapp tossed the envelope on what was left of the fire and pointed toward the rear entrance. "Go relieve Donatella, but remember, unless it's absolutely necessary, don't do anything. We're just spectators."
"You got it,"
he said, obviously thankful to have a second chance. "What about you?" "I'm staying here." It hadn't been the plan, but now that he'd gone through the trouble of getting into the church, why not? Nassar, Wilson, and their people would be arriving soon, and Abdo would assume that they were connected with Black's operation. Then the shit was going to hit the fan. With a little luck, Nassar would be killed in an attack by South Sudanese rebels who had nothing to do with Mitch Rapp or ISIS. After that, Claudia could focus on putting together enough intel to clear his name, and to strong-arm King Faisal into excising any remaining conspirators from his country. Then again, maybe it wouldn't be that easy. His phone vibrated, and he inserted an earpiece.
"Mitch, are you there?"
Claudia's voice.
"Yeah. I managed to detour Wilson's motorcade once, but that was all. They're 2 minutes out. What's your situation?"
"I'm in the church."
"Do you have time to get out?"
"I'm staying," he said, starting to climb a ladder into the balcony. "I've got good position here." "And Kent?" Her tone suggested that she thought he might be dead. "On his way to relieve Donatella."
"I don't need that boy's help," Donatella chimed in.
"Don't argue. Just give him the rifle," Rapp said. Azarov's voice came on.
"I have eyes on 3 cars approaching the front gate, moving fast. I can't see inside them, though."
"Donatella?" Rapp said, moving to a partially intact stained glass window and peering through one of the clear panels. The sun was coming up, casting the city in a deep orange glow. "What have you got?"
"I can't see in the cars either, but we have a lot of activity from Abdo's sentries, and the civilians in the street are all running for cover."
Rapp spotted the approaching vehicles in the dawn light. They skidded to a stop at the front gate, and 4 men got out of the lead car, fanning out as one of them went to work with a set of bolt cutters.
"I've taken over Donatella's position," Kent said.
"Ready to rock."
The gate was pushed open, and the remaining passengers stepped out as the cars eased inside. To Rapp's practiced eye, a few looked extremely well-trained, but the others were a mess. Not what he'd expect from a team assembled from Saudi spec ops. Further, there were 2 men who looked like locals.
"Give me a sit rep on Abdo's men," Rapp said.
"They're in the process of surrounding the building, staying out of sight," Azarov responded.
Rapp pulled out his Glock and checked it. He wasn't sure if any of this was going to work, but at the very least, it was going to be interesting.
Chapter 48. Joel Wilson leaned forward between the SUV's seats, scanning through the windshield. The sunrise was still just a weak glow on the horizon, but it provided enough illumination for him to watch his men spread out in the courtyard. A few seconds later, they had breached the peeling front doors and disappeared inside the church. What they would find was a complete unknown. He had no assets in Juba, and there had been no time for meaningful reconnaissance. In a city full of war-weary and suspicious Sudanese, the presence of an advance team would have been reported throughout the region in a matter of hours. There had been no choice but to roll into town like a hurricane in an effort to stay ahead of the informants that Rapp undoubtedly had on the payroll.
His fingers gripped the seats as he anticipated the telltale bursts of automatic fire, followed by the individual volleys of Rapp's pistol. The clock in his head ticked steadily, each movement of the imaginary second hand reducing his hopes further. Finally, a heavily accented voice came over his earpiece.
"The building is clear."
"Fuck," Wilson said, throwing himself back in the seat.
"We go in?" his driver asked.
"Of course we go in, idiot! Now move!" They accelerated through the gate and Wilson got out into the rising heat of the morning. Where the fuck was that CIA son of a bitch? Gone to murder more innocent Saudis? Or had he been tipped off? And if it was the latter, who was responsible? Someone at the local airport? Someone back in Washington? One of Wilson's own men? He knew little about them other than the fact that they had Nassar's confidence. As impressive as the Saudi intelligence chief was, moving this quickly and joining forces with locals was always dangerous. Loyalties in this part of the world were bought and sold almost hourly. Wilson jogged inside and pushed the doors closed behind him. "Cover all the entrances and get men up into the balcony. I also want men on the outside wall spotting in every direction. If Rapp doesn't know we're here, he might be stupid enough to walk into a trap. And if he does know we're here, he might be stupid enough to attack."
"Understood," came the response over his earpiece, although no one seemed to be moving.
The sunlight coming through the building's cracks was sufficient to illuminate the interior, but there wasn't much to see. Rotting pews strewn across the floor, the remains of an altar, and piles of debris created by the structure's slow collapse.
"Sir," a man near the center called. "Here!"
Wilson ran to him and looked down at what he had found. A doused campfire. He crouched and held out a hand, feeling a jolt of excitement at the heat still emanating from it. The fire had recently been put out, explaining the water on the floor. But why was the pew next to it so wet? He ran a hand over the top and then did the same underneath. It came back stained with blood. He bolted to his feet and drew his gun. "We've had recent activity in here. Talk to me. What are we seeing from the walls?"
"Be calm," came the response from Nassar's lead man. "We have no—"
His condescending response was drowned out by the shouts of two men standing next to a pile of debris in the northeast corner of the building. Wilson started in their direction, but then stopped short when he saw the bodies. One still had the cord that had killed him wrapped around his neck. The other was far more gruesome. A machete had nearly cut his head in half, and the handle was still jutting from the bridge of his nose. Wilson stumbled back a few steps, suddenly very aware that he wasn't a combat operative. He was an investigator with a talent for office politics. Starting to panic, he drew his sidearm for the first time in his career and started toward the main door.
"Pull back. Bring whatever evidence you've found, but I want everyone back in the vehicles in 1 minute. We're—"
A voice speaking rapid-fire Arabic came over the comm, followed by a response from Nassar's commander, who no longer sounded so cocksure.
"What is it?" Wilson said. "What's going on?"
Two men ran past him and out the door, while another climbed into the balcony and took up a position near a broken window. The voices in his earpiece became increasingly desperate, and he found himself frozen.
"What's happening?"
he screamed into the microphone on his headset. No one bothered to respond. Rapp remained completely still, using only his eyes to track the men running along the west side of the church. He was sitting on a beam jutting 30 feet above the side courtyard. There was significant damage to this section of roof, and he blended perfectly into the visual chaos. Shouting was audible through the plastic sheet that kept rain from penetrating to the building's interior. Mostly Arabic, but also an unintelligible African dialect, and a panicked American voice that undoubtedly belonged to Joel Wilson. According to Black and Azeroff, the cars that made up Wilson's motorcade were now empty, and Nassar hadn't appeared. The Saudi intelligence chief continued to prove that he was in no way stupid. While Wilson was blind to anything but revenge and transforming himself into the great American savior, Nassar apparently had no such delusions. Despite the fact that his life was very much hanging in the balance, he could still see clearly enough to be suspicious of the information on Claudia's computer. Hats off to the terrorist son of a bitch.
"Here we go," Black said over the comm. "Two pickups coming in hot. Most of Abdo's spotters seem to be backing off, so the main force is going to be the men in those vehicles."
"How many?" Rapp asked, dangling his feet over the edge of the roof to loosen his stiff right knee.
"Moving too fast to get an exact head count. You know the drill, though. Small trucks packed to the point that they're damn near dragging the ground."
"Copy that," Rapp said.
"They're moving out of my line of sight," Black said. "Grisha, are you picking them up?"
"Yes. I'd estimate 23 men, including the drivers. Assault rifles, mostly AKs. The front vehicle is swerving a bit. It doesn't look like a mechanical problem. I'd guess that the driver's impaired either by alcohol or drugs. ETA to the gate is 15 seconds, and they aren't slowing down. It's conceivable that they're going to try to ram the doors."
"What? No plate numbers?" Black said.
"They didn't seem relevant," Azarov responded, not picking up on the sarcasm.
"Mitch," Donatella said, "I have eyes on you from the southwest. There's no one in the courtyard below you. Can you climb down and get out the back? Kent can give you cover."
"I might take you up on that, Donatella, but not quite yet." Joel Wilson heard the growing roar of an engine outside, but couldn't work out what that meant until a pickup crashed through the church's front entrance. The doors were flung across the floor, along with most of the men who had been riding in the bed. The FBI man froze, looking at the African soldiers strewn out in front of him. Some were dazed, some were getting to their feet, and others were either dead or unconscious. Had their brakes failed? Or had they come through the doors on purpose? Who would do such a thing? Successive bursts of automatic fire pulled him from his stupor, and he sprinted toward the back of the building, diving behind an overturned pew along the west wall. From around the side, he saw a second pickup come through the hole made by the first. The men in the back jumped out and began running in every direction, spraying rounds haphazardly in the general direction of Nassar's men. Wilson drew back farther behind the pew, unwilling to fire his weapon out of fear that it would give away his position. Who were these men? Had Rapp hired them? He'd referred to himself as "we" in the emails. Was this his team? A group of suicidal African mercenaries? Would a man famous for his precision, someone who almost always killed with a single shot to the head, work with people like this? He dropped onto his back and peered out from beneath the bench. At least for now, Nassar's men seemed to have the tactical advantage. They'd taken cover at strategic points around the church and were firing controlled bursts, in contrast to their attackers, who were shooting wildly from a run. Would it be enough of an advantage? They were outnumbered, and there was no way to know if this was the entire opposing force. There could be hundreds of similar soldiers closing in from the courtyard. The image of the man with the machete in his head flashed through his mind, and he fumbled for his satellite phone, dialing a private number the Saudi intelligence chief had given him. It rang a few times before Nassar came on. Wilson was halfway through a babbling plea for backup when the phone beeped, and a woman's voice asked him to leave a message. Chapter 49 Rapp continued to work his right knee, swinging his leg out over the courtyard as the battle raged on inside the church. He heard a scream behind him and glanced back in time to see one of Wilson's men stagger into the plastic covering a hole in the roof. He slid down it, leaving a streak that glowed crimson in the dawn light.
"Mitch," Kent Black said over his earpiece, "are you just going to sit there all day? Can I have some coffee delivered?"
Napoleon said, "When your enemy is doing something stupid, don't interfere."
I think the attribution is apocryphal, Azarov commented.
The point's valid, though.
Agreed.
The frequency of gunfire had leveled out and was now declining, indicating that the running battle inside had turned into a skirmish between forces with cover. Unfortunately, it wouldn't turn into a war of attrition. Abdo probably already had reinforcements on the way. Nassar wasn't there, so Rapp had resigned himself to the fact that his carefully laid trap was a bust. In light of that, did he care what happened in that church? It wasn't his nature to walk away from fights, but what was there to gain from going in there? He could kill Wilson and a few of Nassar's men, but it seemed that Abdo had that well in hand. The only thing he could accomplish was to be seen, or worse, have someone snap a cell phone picture of him. He missed the involvement of Irene Kennedy even more than he'd thought he would. The role of strategist was unsatisfying as hell. Kent, is there a way I can get off of here from the outside?
Not unless you're Spider-Man. The walls are dead smooth, and I wouldn't trust any of that roof structure.
Copy, Rapp said, feeling strangely relieved for an excuse not to slink out of there like the criminal he supposed he now was. Looks like I'm going to have to go out the way I came in. Grisha, can you reposition so you can cover that line of retreat?
Affirmative. 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes, Rapp repeated, setting the timer on his watch. Do it. I'm going in. He drew his weapon and slipped through the blood-smeared plastic. Only one of Nassar's men had managed to set up in the balcony, and a series of bullets had stitched their way up through the floor, killing him. He was lying at the edge with his rifle hanging partially over it. Rapp plucked the weapon from his lifeless hands and lay down on top of him. The fact that none of the rounds had come through the man's back suggested he would provide sufficient protection. Below, it looked like a bomb had gone off. Men were strewn across the floor, some taken out by gunfire and others by the impact of the pickup when it had crashed through the doors. Two of Nassar's men were still alive and shooting from cover near the altar. Abdo's force was down to 3, 2 hugging the west wall and 1 just out of sight beneath the balcony overhang. Rapp scanned for a sign of Wilson, but couldn't see any. Has anyone come out? He said into his radio. All responses came back negative. Could the FBI man be holed up in Black's office? It seemed unlikely. There was a door leading to the outside, and if he knew Joel Wilson, he would have taken the opportunity to escape. Rapp's questions were answered a moment later when the man beneath the balcony broke cover and ran for the east wall. Nassar's remaining shooters were too busy with the other two to worry about him, but a familiar white face popped up from behind a pew near the back wall and fired a few rounds that didn't get within 20 feet. Abdo's man threw himself to the ground and began crawling toward Wilson. Rapp watched for a few seconds, but then reluctantly reached for his silencer. Mitch, Black said over the radio. The spotters I can see are starting to move away.
I'm seeing something similar, Azarov said.
Me too, Donatella confirmed.
Copy, Rapp said, screwing on his suppressor. If he were an optimist, he'd think that they'd had enough and were retreating. It was much more likely, though, that Abdo had a secondary force moving in and that they were pulling back to join it. As much as he would have liked to wait until a few more of the people below had killed each other, there was no more time. Rapp fired a carefully aimed round into the head of the man crawling toward Wilson, followed by a round to the ribs of one of the men along the east wall. Nassar's shooters saw him go down, and one broke cover, going for position on Abdo's last surviving man. The African gorilla saw him and fired, taking him out before being cut down himself. Then everything went still. Joel, Rapp shouted. You still alive back there?
What? Who is that?
It's Mitch. The FBI man didn't respond immediately. Finally, what are your intentions? It was a good question. The CIA assassin Mitch Rapp would kill him and Nassar's last man, then leave Irene Kennedy to clean up the mess, The question now was, what would Mitch Rapp, the international fugitive, do?
Now that I've saved your ass, I'm surrendering, he called. I want to go back to the U.S. so I can clear my name.
Mitch, Claudia said over his earpiece, what are you doing? He isn't...
What do you say, Joel? Rapp said, cutting her off. It was time to show Wilson whom he was working for. It was a long shot, but maybe the FBI man could be useful.
Why should I believe you?
Because I've got the high ground. If I wanted you and your last man dead, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
A few more seconds passed before Wilson rose slowly into view. He motioned for his man to do the same, and surprisingly, he obeyed.
Rapp slid his weapon down the back of his pants and stood, walking deliberately toward the edge of the balcony.
Does your friend speak English?
Yes, the man answered for himself.
Then you understand not to shoot, that I'm surrendering.
I understand.
What the fuck are you doing?
Black said, sharing Claudia's confusion.
Blast those assholes into the next time zone and let's get the hell out of here.
It probably wasn't bad advice, but Rapp ignored it. He was curious about what would happen.
While he was confident that Wilson really did want to march him in front of the cameras in chains, Nassar would be far less excited about the prospect of a bunch of congressional hearings.
Rapp inched into view, ignoring Wilson, who was aiming at him with a shaking hand, and instead focusing on Nassar's man. His accent and mediocre performance during the fight suggested that he wasn't one of the Saudi General Intelligence Directorate's crack operatives. And if that was the case, who was he?
Okay, everybody, take it easy. I'm coming down.
Nassar's man sighted over an AK-47 as Rapp moved toward the ladder. The distance between them was about 30 yards, and that, combined with the angle, would make a clean shot difficult. The Arab looked smart enough to wait, but for how long? Would he take the doable but difficult shot at Rapp when he started down the ladder? Or would he risk letting the CIA man get close enough for a sure thing? Those questions were answered when Rapp reached for the first rung. The man's stance suddenly stabilized, and he pulled the butt of his assault rifle more firmly into his shoulder. Rapp jerked back just as a short burst chewed through the ladder an inch from his hand.
Cease fire!
Wilson shrieked as Rapp dropped to the floor.
Cease fire!
The sound of the rifle changed subtly as the shooter adjusted his aim and squeezed off another burst. Rapp rolled to absorb his impact with the floor and rose to one knee in time to see Wilson throw himself over a pew. Impacts from successive rounds pounded the wood for a few seconds before Nassar's man began swinging his weapon back in Rapp's direction. The CIA man's position wasn't ideal, and it took more time than it should have to line up. The shooter was backing away as he fired, going for the cover of the altar. Rapp squeezed off a round and hit him in the stomach, causing him to lose control of his rifle. The barrel rose, and rounds started punching holes in the roof as Rapp sprinted across the floor, grabbing the weapon and taking the wounded man's legs out from under him. He tossed the AK and used a foot to pin the Arab to the ground, ignoring the fact that Wilson was approaching with his pistol held out in front of him.
I told him not to shoot, the FBI man stammered. And then he tried to kill me.
Rapp grabbed the injured Arab by the collar and began dragging him toward what was left of the church's front entrance. Do you have a phone with a camera, Joel?
A phone?
He mumbled.
Yeah, I have one. But I
get pictures of all of Nassar's men. Do it now.
The careful recording of crime scenes was very much in the FBI man's wheelhouse, and the task seemed to revive him. He moved hesitantly at first, but gained confidence as he flipped the bodies and lined his lens up with their faces. Change of plans. I'm coming out the front, Rapp said into his radio. Wilson will be following. Don't shoot either of us. Black, who had line of sight on the front courtyard, acknowledged.
Where are you going?
Wilson said, running up behind him.
What just happened? Who attacked us? Were they your people?
Rapp dropped the wounded man behind one of the vehicles in Wilson's motorcade and popped the trunk.
You're under arrest, the FBI man said in a voice that was completely devoid of conviction. He didn't seem to be able to think of anything else to say.
The injured man managed to find the strength to swear in Arabic as Rapp lifted him into the trunk. It was a tight fit, and he had to slam the lid a few times to get it to latch.
You have a shooter moving toward you from the rear courtyard, Azarov said over his earpiece. He appears to be one of Abdo's men.
Can you handle it?
I should have a shot in a few seconds.
Mitch, Wilson said, once again aiming his service pistol. Did you hear me? You're under— Azarov's rifle sounded, and Wilson dropped to the ground.
Shit! Someone's shooting at us!
Rapp slid into the vehicle's driver's seat, leaned out the window, and looked down at the man lying in the dirt.
Get in the car, Joel.
Wilson thought about it for less than a second before jumping to his feet and scrambling for the passenger door. Chapter 50. Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Malik, respond!
But there was only silence where moments before desperate shouts and gunfire had reigned. Ali Nassar removed his headset and stared blankly across his desk. He'd considered the possibility that this was a trap, and for that reason had not accompanied Wilson to South Sudan. Even in his own mind, though, his return to Riyadh had been cautious to the point of paranoia. The idea that someone like Rapp would be capable of backdating emails and mining them with a series of innocuous clues that, in their entirety, were just barely enough for Wilson to find that church. It was unthinkable. Despite the air conditioning, Nassar could feel the sweat beginning to run down his forehead. One thing was certain. Four of his most loyal men were dead. Worse, so were the men supplied by Sayyid Halabi. Men like Malik. Could they be identified and traced to him? What about the Africans the mullah had provided? Finally, what if they weren't in fact all dead? What if some were in a condition that would allow interrogation? His hand hesitated for a moment over his phone, and then he picked it up, dialing his assistant.
Yes, Director. What can I do for you?
I need you to contact Jean-Paul Jayousi.
Sir? Are you—
Just do it, Nassar said.
Have him call me on this line.
His man's reluctance wasn't surprising. Jayousi was the head of the loosely defined South Sudanese intelligence apparatus, and a man who was best avoided at all costs. Until the recent formation of his country, he had been nothing more than a sadistic criminal with a gift for gathering and brokering sensitive information. Since then, little had changed. He had loyalty to no one and nothing beyond feeding his own insatiable desire for wealth, power, and women. Nassar waited for almost half an hour in unbearable silence before his phone rang. Jayousi couldn't be trusted, and there was no question that the details of their conversation would be up for sale before it had even ended. But what choice did he have? If he accepted that a thug like Mitch Rapp couldn't have planned a trap this clever, then he had to consider the possibility that Irene Kennedy was involved. And if that was the case, the game he was playing was far more dangerous than he could have ever dreamed. He couldn't afford to leave any information on the table, even if it meant hinting at the true nature of his involvement. General Jayousi, he said, putting the phone to his ear. I appreciate you getting back to me so quickly. It's not every day that I receive a call from someone of your stature and your... His voice faded for a moment as he searched for the right word. Resources. Normally, political pleasantries would be exchanged, but Nassar had no interest in speaking to this man any longer than necessary. They both understood their roles in this transaction, and there was no point in pretending otherwise. I'm interested in a gun battle that occurred in Juba today.
There were many such incidents, the man probed. Can you be more specific?
It just ended, and was centered around a church.
Ah, the well-armed foreigners. Your people, Ali? I had men attached to the detail, as did the Americans. We were trying to locate a terrorist who has recently murdered a number of prominent Saudi citizens. Information came to light that he might be hiding in South Sudan. And you're just calling me now. If you told me sooner, I could have helped you.
More likely the man would have played both sides, charging an outrageous sum to support Nassar's men while selling information of their arrival to anyone interested.
We had to move quickly, Nassar said. My apologies.
There was a lengthy silence before Jayuzi spoke again.
Neither of us has any interest in wasting valuable time, so let me be direct. I have information, and you have money. Am I mistaken, or is an exchange desirable?
It is.
$1 million.
We both know that's an unconscionable sum.
Indeed, and my information isn't even that good. But you brought a team into my country and created a deadly confrontation in the middle of my capital city. Under the circumstances, and considering the obscene wealth that your country holds, I see this as a fair price.
Do you have account information for the wire?
Those details can be handled by our people at a later time. I have no reason to believe that you are not a man of your word.
Then we have an agreement. What do you know about what happened in Juba?
The church was the headquarters of an American arms dealer.
Name?
Jason Blaze. Obviously an alias. And do you know his actual identity?
No. It was never something that interested me.
Undoubtedly because Blaze was paying him to look the other way.
Please, continue.
Recently a group of white people joined his business. Two men and two women.
Do you have descriptions?
The tapping of computer keys was audible over the marginal connection.
The women are both quite attractive and dark-haired. One mid-30s, the other perhaps 10 years older. The younger of the two appears to be a native French speaker. The men are both athletic in build and around 6 feet. One is blonde and tanned, but probably naturally fair-skinned. Likely Eastern European. The other has nearly black hair, long, with a beard and dark complexion. He speaks English with an American accent and, we think, fluent Arabic. He did something that no one else has been able to. He killed a local rebel leader named Nanomi, apparently by driving a knife through his skull.
Nassar nodded to himself. Mitch Rapp. And it could be assumed with reasonable confidence that the young Frenchwoman was Claudia Dufour. But who were the others?
After that incident, they were forced to run, Jayuzi continued. The rebel group sent scouts to watch the church in case they returned.
Nassar felt some of the tension in his shoulders easing. Jayuzi's information was proving to be worth its exorbitant price. The rap it portrayed was the one that Nassar was familiar with. A violent man who had been unable to control himself when confronted with a meaningless African guerrilla, thus forcing his team to flee an ideal base of operations.
So my men, Nassar began, but Jayuzi anticipated his question.
Walked into an ambush meant for Blaze and his associates.
Nassar turned the man's words over in his head for a few moments.
Were there any survivors? One of the cars your men arrived in was seen leaving the scene, but we have no information as to who was inside.
A rebel fleeing the battle?
one of Nassar's own men. None had contacted him yet, but it was possible that they just hadn't had the opportunity. Was there a white man among the dead, General? An FBI agent named Wilson was in command.
I don't have those kinds of details yet. My people are just now moving in.
And you'll provide me with that information as soon as you have it?
Of course.
Then I have only one last question for you, General. Do you know where Blaze and his people went?
I'm afraid that I don't have the ability to share that information with you, Ali.
It was a strangely constructed response. Is that because you don't know, or because our financial transaction isn't satisfactory?
Neither. It's because of what Blaze's new associate did to Nanome. I see no profit in making an enemy of him.
Chapter 51. South Sudan. The city of Juba was 30 miles in the rearview mirror, and Joel Wilson still hadn't spoken. Rapp glanced over and saw him staring through the windshield in a state that bordered on catatonia. Was it feasible that he was re-evaluating the things he'd done? Could he actually be facing the fact that after being duped by the Pakistanis, he'd just fallen into an identical trap set by the Saudis? Rapp was still 50-50 on leaving the man's body in the desert, but his enthusiasm for the idea was waning. The risks of counting on Wilson to pull his head out of his ass were astronomical, but the benefits might be too. This kind of complex plotting was Irene Kennedy's sphere of influence, and he'd never seen any reason to get involved. With her out of the picture, though, a hammer couldn't be the only tool in his box. There was a poorly defined dirt track to his right, and he took it, climbing a steep slope out of the scrub and into the trees. The change in scenery broke Wilson from his trance.
Where are you taking me?
Relax, Joel. I need to talk to the asshole in the trunk before he bleeds out. Is there anything you can tell me about him? Wilson nodded.
His name is Malik, one of Nassar's men.
The road petered out in a small clearing surrounded by dense vegetation. Rapp stopped in the middle, stepping out and going around to the trunk. Any concerns he had that the man was dead from blood loss or heat stroke were put to rest before the trunk lid was even fully open. Malik swung a carjack at him with a piercing shout, missing by at least a foot. Rapp didn't bother to disarm the man, instead grabbing him by the hair and dragging him out into the dirt. The terrorist took another swing, but it passed harmlessly in front of Rapp's shins. Get a photo. Wilson retrieved his phone and snapped a shot of the man's face. Can you record audio on that thing?
Sure.
Then do it, Rapp said, turning his attention to the man trying unsuccessfully to push himself to his feet. He'd been bleeding for a good 45 minutes now and wouldn't last much longer. Who are you? Malik spit a mouthful of blood in Rapp's direction, answering in Arabic.
I don't have to tell you anything.
Interesting accent, Rapp replied. Not Saudi Arabia. Iraq? He didn't answer. Rapp looked over at Wilson. You try.
I don't think he's going-
Don't make me tell you again, Joel. The FBI man took a hesitant step back in the face of Rapp's sudden anger, but complied.
Where are you from? Are you Iraqi?
The man spit another crimson glob, but didn't otherwise respond. Out of the corner of his eye, Rapp spotted movement at the edge of the clearing and brought his hand closer to his Glock.
We want to get you medical attention, Wilson said, but in return we need information.
Fuck you.
Rapp continued scanning the tree line, but rather than spotting the camouflage of a local rebel, he saw flashes of reddish-brown and black fur. Not as bad as a contingent of Abdo's men, but better to move things along. The scent of the dying man's blood was obviously carrying on the wind. Rapp shoved Wilson out of the way and stepped down on the bullet hole in Malik's stomach.
The man screamed in pain and grabbed Rapp's ankle, trying futilely to escape.
"You have to answer," Rapp shouted down at him. "You work for him."
"I work only for the glory of Allah."
"I saw you," Rapp said, grinding his heel into the wound. "You betrayed your god. Why are you working for this man? Why are you working for the FBI? Are you a Christian?"
His expression of agony was replaced by one of horror at the suggestion.
"Or was it just money? Did you sell out your god for a few American dollars? That's it, isn't it? You're just a whore."
Now the Arab was backed into a theological corner. He knew that his time on this earth could be measured in minutes. Would he meet Allah, having not defended his faith?
"My allegiance is to Mullah Halabi, God's representative on earth."
Wilson stared down at him, stunned by the revelation.
"Don't lie to me," Rapp said, rewarding the man's response with a slight reduction in the pressure on his stomach. "Nassar hates ISIS. It's a threat to the Saudi royalty."
"You're a fool. The royalty have become tools of the West. They aren't true followers of Islam."
"That may be true, but they are Nassar's power base," Rapp said, easing his foot back a bit more. "And that son of a bitch loves his power."
"The weaker we look in Saudi Arabia, the more complacent Faisal becomes. The old fool thinks we've stopped our propaganda campaign because of the intelligence directorate."
Rapp loved these ISIS pricks. It was a serious pain in the ass to get the Al-Qaeda guys to talk, but their dumber, crazier cousins would run their mouths all day if you let them. Nassar, on the other hand, was neither dumb nor crazy. Teaming up with Halabi to tamp down ISIS propaganda in Saudi Arabia was a cunning move. The fact that Faisal had one foot in the grave made him willing to delegate to anyone who looked like they could hold the kingdom together. As he became weaker, Nassar became stronger. With the help of Halabi and his millions of Saudi sympathizers, the king's death could set the stage for a coup. The royal family would be chased into exile, leaving their massive financial and military resources in the hands of radicals. Wilson licked nervously at his lips, the realization that he'd been working for ISIS finally starting to sink in. The decision not to leave him for the scavengers might work out after all. Rapp stepped over Malik and slid back into the car. Movement at the edge of the clearing was becoming less hesitant, and a few dark ringed eyes were starting to appear. Not sure what was happening, Wilson ran around the other side only to find the door locked. He dove through the window when Rapp began pulling away, getting stuck halfway in.
"Stop! You can't leave me!"
Rapp grabbed him by the back of the head and slammed his face into the console between the seats. The padding made the act a bit unsatisfying, so he repeated it a few more times before shoving Wilson back through the window. The FBI man fell into the dirt, dazed and bleeding badly from his nose. "There aren't a lot of second chances in life," Rapp said, leaning across the passenger seat. "Do the right thing, Joel, or I'll be coming for you." He turned the car and was about to floor the accelerator, but instead paused to point toward Malik and the pack of wild dogs he was desperately trying to crawl away from. "And you might want to consider running." Chapter 52.
"I think you're completely insane."
"I know," Rapp said. Claudia was sitting on the edge of the bed, wearing exactly the expression he'd expected. She hadn't really been a citizen of any particular country since she was a child. Her life had been about moving around the world in search of jobs, or to stay ahead of whoever was chasing. His history was different. Sure, he'd originally joined the CIA out of anger and hate, but those emotions had been replaced over the years by a sense of duty. At the end of the day, he believed in what he did. He believed in America, and the idea that everyone had a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Where Jefferson had gone wrong was in thinking that those rights were inalienable. In truth, they had to be fought for every